Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and it is now or never. I go through this all the time. What does that mean? It's now or never? Let's put it to you this way, folks. How many people do you know that, you know, well, yeah, they acknowledge that the government's getting out of control, but will they acknowledge that there is no end in sight? It's only getting worse and worse. Do they believe it's going to be better next year or it's going to be worse next year? If you can acknowledge and you can be adult enough to say, you know, the increase in government overreach is going to reach a point very soon that it will be insurmountable. And anybody that's adult enough that can make that conclusion has to say that it's now or never, period. You know, I used to say on my radio show, I'm looking to the east. I'm looking towards D.C. I'm looking through the news. I do not see any evidence whatsoever that they're going to start dismantling all of the tyranny they've created, which is why it's really important that we kind of lead the argument over the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. I think that this is a very powerful message. And as a matter of fact, 9 times out of 10, the person that's hearing this for the first time, what, are you kidding me? The Department of Transportation is unconstitutional? The three presidents vetoed it? Their jaw drops. They don't want to believe it. Why? It's easy, folks. We start connecting the dots. If they can't do something that seems like a no-brainer, like the Department of Transportation, then how in the heck are they getting away with labor, housing, energy, education, and so forth and so on? Healthcare. I mean, really? We got a lot to go through today. It's Feedback Friday. And what we have already covered, we've covered the scale of liberty, and we've covered natural law. And what we need to cover is American republicanism. And I'm going to go down American republicanism down a different path. We're not going to be doing it today. We have to do it probably next week on Monday. So when we cover American republicanism, then we will actually go into why we have bicameral legislative bodies in our state houses as well as in our federal government. Now, the consideration is we're growing as in population, in density, in some respects, that counties need to have bicameral legislative bodies as well. And so, you know, what do I mean by that? Because bottom line, the whole premise of our system, and we may be outgrowing the U.S. Constitution in places like L.A., New York, and what have you, because they've moved towards a democracy. And as a matter of fact, that's how big cities run, as a democracy, and it's mob rule. And so if you actually started implementing, you know, some reservations, because 9 times out of 10, folks, when you look at the mob rule, if we had a Republican form of government that really required a specific majority, 2/3, 3/4, you'd probably find that cities would not be blue. You'd probably find, even though the majority of the people are blue, they would not be able to implement their, you know, their socialism. They would not be able to implement their agenda in basically taking from those who have and giving to those who have not, and being able to decimate their cities. I mean, look what Seattle has done. Look what San Francisco has done. Look what New York is doing. Folks, understanding republicanism and how the framers redefined this is critical. Because this, as soon as you understand this, this makes complete sense as to why you have a senator in your state house instead of just a representative. So what we need to cover today is, you know, the details of kind of going back and diving into, because I've sent you to the website. We'll get back into that. And so if you've done any diving, anybody that has taken this stuff seriously, you'll understand why we have to go through this. Now, I believe that there are really, really, really good people that are getting involved in things that they don't know, and they have no idea that they're in the arms of either controlled opposition or downright going in the wrong direction. Now, you hear me say this all the time. We need to unify on the Constitution. If your organization that you're affiliated with refuses to unite with Reclaiming the Republic, refuses to unite with the National Liberty Alliance, refuses to unite with the We the People Foundation, the Constitutional Alliance, the Constitution Association. We have a lot of different groups that we affiliate with. We, you know, when I say we, Reclaiming the Republic, this is a network. This is not an organization. You don't pay dues. You don't join this. You align with us and you work with, you know, our affiliates. The We the People Foundation was, you know, the foremost, and the their premise was the First Amendment petition. And so we've completely embraced that. We actually, what we're creating with hopefully their assistance and their joining with us in creating a repository of an incredible amount of petitions that you're going to be able to use. I just had a conversation about this yesterday regarding what type of petitions we are going to have. We hope to have a petition for you to be able to go to your county commissioners and do away with the restrictions of your homeowners association so that you can have a chicken's coop. You can't tell me that there's going to be a guarantee of chickens on your, you know, chickens for sale or even eggs on the counter in your grocery store. See, the whole reason that HOA went down, because, you know, we have everything we need. We should just be able to go to the store. So you shouldn't need to have that. We don't like it and we don't want you to have it. You're going to sign an agreement that says you can have that. Well, hold on here. Now they're holding you to that. And I actually live in an HOA where some good people had a chicken coop. And, you know, it was more for pets. I think they were keeping the eggs or whatever. I don't care. I don't care why they had it. The HOA demanded that they got rid of it. They voted them to say, you must get rid of this. As far as I'm concerned, and I need to find out who these people are. This is going to be I will do this before this year is out. I'm going to find out who they were, and I'm going to tell them that if they want to take a stand, I will help them. I will go to the county commissioners and demand that the county commissioners reel in these HOAs that say you can't have chicken coops. You have a right to provide for yourself. And when you live in a small little government that is sanctioned by the state government, an HOA is sanctioned by the county and state government, then they cannot enforce any laws. They can't make or enforce any law that abridges your privileges and immunities and your ability to be able to feed yourself and grow your own food and have and produce your own food just for you. We're not talking about commercial purposes. We're just talking about being able to sustain your own life. You have a right to use your property to do that. And so for them to come along and say, you're going to have 1 acre and you can't produce anything on it. What happens when everybody loses their job? How are you going to feed yourself? You know, I shudder the day when we become that heartless. You know, some of the people in the HOAs may have that deep of pockets. But I don't care how deep your pockets are. When you can't get that food, it doesn't matter how deep your pockets are. You're going to starve. And so I hope that calmer heads will prevail. And I hope that we actually can come to, you know, a quick epiphany to go, you know, people do have fundamental rights. And we can't go down this path of saying you can't do to your property what you feel is best for you. I understand that people want to protect their property value, but I'm going to tell you right now that the only way your property value really gets harmed is when somebody goes down the path of turning their home into a commercial endeavor. When you start growing pigs to a point where you're selling pigs, you're selling the babies, you're breeding dogs, those types of things, that's out of control. Now, it's one thing that you have one litter because the two dogs got together. It's another thing when you have litter after litter after litter after litter. Now you've proven that this is a commercial endeavor. And so I'm okay with HOA saying this is a residential area, not a business area. And if you're going to breed dogs, you need to go into a business area or move out of this area. I'm okay with that. But when it comes down to fundamentally sustaining yourself, that's a complete different thing. This is why it is really important that we have this. So what we need to do is we need to dive into, because I got a lot of content to cover, and I'm going to get into this, but one of the two things I need to remind you is to please subscribe to the Reclaiming the Republic YouTube channel, and be advised that when we get the sessions through and over, what I'm planning on doing is I'm planning on not having and maintaining myself that you listen to me for an hour a week. We're going to start creating a coordination phone call that will eventually migrate into regional phone calls, and we'll have a national phone call so that we have regional representation and so forth. So eventually, my phone calls will be really more of those group leadership, for regions or what have you, as we grow. Because bottom line, we need to maintain a flow of communications and a flow of nurturing and developing the least of us. We have to help everybody get to the level where they can speak profoundly regarding First Amendment petitions, regarding the Constitution, and regarding what needs to be done to reel government in, because it's all about holding government accountable. Now, what we want to do is we want to focus in our next couple of segments the content on the National Assembly site, nationalassembly.net. We'll get into the URL and all of that. And when we come back, we're going to actually go through a few of their pages. But here, we got a quick promo, and we'll be right back. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's go to the website, and this is all as a final follow-up to Bill. And Bill's a good guy. I think he's a good patriot, and he's learned about something that really started making sense. And it was all founded in old arcane law. And I believe the origins of this stuff came from some of the early founded states. Now, keep in mind, Kentucky, Tennessee, even Vermont, some of the early states that joined the Union still had, because they were parts of, Kentucky was a part of Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina. And so when we look at how these states were formed and how they you know, came to be, you're going to find that they actually had in, you know, their courts and so forth, old government processes, old government, monarchical government type of processes. In other words, common law grand juries. And the ability to call forth a common law grand jury was a right that was given to the people in the monarchy. Why? Because in a monarchy, you didn't have a representative government. You had a sovereign over you, and that person, the sheriff or whomever was the magistrate, they dictated everything. So what you needed to do was you needed to form a group of people, of citizens, to stand up against your magistrate, to stand up against this monarchical government. And this is where you would put to the test whether your rights were being imposed upon and infringed or not. And so there was a lot of power in that form of government. If you look at monarchical forms of government today, the rights of the people is gone completely. But the rights of the people was protected by one, the Bill of Rights, and common law. Common law was such a beautiful thing that as the people stood up with, you know, with King John and creating the Magna Carta and establishing these common law practices, it was such a beautiful thing because here the people had this level of protection. Well, a better level of protection is available to us in a common law system of a republican form of government, where instead of having to create, you know, a court to stand up against a magistrate, you have a representative, and that representative answers to you, and you replace them. That's the whole point. If you go through Madison's lectures on the beauty of a republican system and a republican form of government, or even read John Adams' A Republic, because that was the pinnacle document. It convinced everybody that we needed to have a republican form of government. And so, and actually, I don't think the document was called a republic. I think it was the American Republican Government or Republican Form of Government. It was a good document, and it was kind of, like me, long-winded on, you know, going over and over and over the importance of having a representative government instead of having a monarchical government, which means that everybody has an opportunity to be in government and to be able to lead. You're not just kept to a breed or, you know, a specific class of people. So when we started going and running into the federal overreach, there were a lot of people that, you know, were really becoming desperate. And they started doing, I'll call it dumpster diving in the old documents and the old books to where they started finding things and go, wow, this is really good. This is what we have to do. Actually, yeah, that's what you have to do if you're in a monarchical common law form of government. It was absolutely appropriate to go down that path of setting up jural assemblies in a common law form of government under a monarchy, not in our constitutional republic. See, the whole key there is that the Constitution dictates the rule of law. The Constitution dictates, you know, what they can do and what they can't do. They don't have general powers. In the old government system under Britain, the monarchs and the magistrates had general powers, and they could do whatever they wanted as long as they didn't go and violate your rights, those sacred rights that were protected by the Bill of Rights. So as I looked at the committees of safety, before we get to the assemblies, as I looked at the committees of safety, what they were basically doing was creating a shadow government to basically replace what they called the de facto government. There's a lot of similarities between these different groups. They use the same terms, de facto and so forth. And so as I looked at the committees of safety, I realized that the problem that they were creating was they were not recognizing our republican form of government, and they were creating a new shadow government that was kind of like a Republican form of government, but not acknowledging and not being a part of the Constitution and not following the process of, I mean, it's almost like, bottom line, they were creating a shadow government. It's not like they went to, you know, an uninhabited area and said, okay, this we're starting all over here. You can't take an established county that has representative government and a bunch of people that are in that representative government. What I mean by that is they're voting and they're participating in that government. And so you can't come along and with, you know, 100,000 people in your county and 100 people create this jural assembly. Even if you have 100 people and you create a jural assembly, you have no legitimacy of saying that, you know, we are the governing bodies of this land. I mean, unless you own all the land, you can't do that. And you still can't do that in America because it has to be a Republican form of government based on the Constitution. I keep telling people that the framework of the Constitution works and it is still intact and in place. Those who are filling those seats are operating well outside the boundaries that they have the authority to operate. But the framework works. Even though the 17th Amendment has changed, it didn't take away the sovereignty of the states. Even though the 16th Amendment added a new form of government, or I should say a new form of taxation, it didn't grant the government. We go through this all the time. It didn't grant the government any new powers, roles, or responsibilities to spend money on health care. Nowhere in that amendment did they have the authority to spend money on education or housing or labor or any of the things that they're doing. It's just a new way to tax people. People, you got to remember, taxation is not the problem. It's the spending and the operating outside the enumerated bounds. So the committees of safety had created these shadow governments, and I called them out on this. Now, there are people that are trying to just get organized as patriots, but they're not using the First Amendment petition. You know, folks, when you really look, and this is why when I looked at what the framers did, you know, we're duplicating what the framers did. And what we're doing is instead of exercising our rights as Englishmen, we're exercising our rights as U.S. citizens. And it's much more powerful because we have the right of petition to hold them accountable. We have the right to remove them in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. What we have in the Constitution, you've heard me say this all the time, that only the Lord knew what we would deal with in these days, and he gave us everything we need right there in that Constitution. We just have to become the patriots and demand full support and full compliance to our compact, to our Constitution. So, as I told you a long time ago, I've been dealing with a lot of people that are trying to go down this path of, you know, setting up, you know, organizational petitions, you know, in other words, unorganized militias in the county. This is what you have to do. Because the Constitution guarantees your right of assembly. You know, in talking with Bill this past few days, you actually heard, we agree, you have a right of assembly. And you have a right of organizing yourself as citizen vigilance, of association. But you don't have the right to create a new government. You have a government, and you have a right to hold that government accountable. And the most important part of all of these rights that all point to that one thing, your right of assembly and association and holding government accountable. That's the right you have to exercise, and these other groups aren't doing it. Interesting. Well, you know, if you really think about it, if I was a pacifist, if I was a true patriot, but I was a pacifist, in other words, I didn't want to get into anybody's grill and call them out, but I knew that what we were doing is wrong, I would probably have a tendency, or I would probably lean towards this assembly thing, because you don't have to actually get out and contest with people. You don't have to hold your public servants accountable. You just basically say, we consider ourselves separate. And that's exactly what they do. So what I want to do is I want to walk through you with through a few of the pages. And this is on the National Assembly website. And so it's www.national-assembly.net. And maybe what I should do is put the link on my website, but I dare not. So what you do and what we're going to go through is the resource page. And so if you go to the resource page and you click on that, and in the resource page, you have this thing called the handbook. If you click on that handbook, it will open up to, basically the form de facto du jour, blah, blah, blah. And basically, this is the first page of the handbook. On the left side, you'll see, like a navigation pane. What you need to do, because there's a lot of stuff that they say here that I want to just skip through, because the action comes in the appendixes. And so when you look at what they have in Appendix A, Appendix A is the official notification and certification. Oh, this sounds, it sounds official. And so what you do is you state your state's name. So if you look at this, it says my state. Well, my state. Well, is that the same state you're living in, or are you creating a new state? Well, let's find out. An open public general assembly was convened of we the people. Now, that's a really ambiguous term, because we the people could be just the five people in the room out of the 100,000 people in the county. Now, we're going into a break, so I'm going to hold it right there. When we come back, we will actually dive into the details of Appendix A, Appendix B, and so forth, and you tell me if I'm reading this wrong. And we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so focusing on the Appendix A, the official notice and certification, you're basically starting off with the official notice and certification, my state. An open public assembly was convened of we the people. Again, is this... what is the percentage of the county of we the people? Is this 1/10, 1/4, 50%? What is the percentage of the people of the county? Retaining our sovereignty provided by our creator of the called of the land called your, whatever your state is, a free and independent nation equals state on, and then the date your state was settled and certified, and the summary minutes are attached and included along with the attached. The following paragraph should reflect the reflection of your state. So this is all highlighted. Articles of Confederation ratified in November 15th, 1777, and in force March 1st, 1781, specifically calling attention to Article 2, each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, or right which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the states. In other words, folks, what they have just done in this highlighted area is they've pointed you right back, starting on November 15th, 1977. Interesting. that this happened November 15th, 1977, that somebody had this epiphany, we have to go back to the Articles of Confederation, because that's exactly what they did. They went back to the Articles of Confederation of 1781 and calling out this right of assembly. And therefore, they kind of completely miss the fact that when the Constitution was ratified by the 13 states, it superseded the Articles of Confederation and they became a dead letter. A dead letter. In other words, you don't go back. You don't go back to the Magna Carta. You don't go back to the British Crown. You don't go back. This is the epoch, a new beginning. Our government and our form of government established on, you know, whatever the date your state ratified that Constitution and the first forming of Congress, which happened to be in May of 1789. And so... You know, so in other words, it's not really pinned down to, you know, like specific names or dates because it was an evolutionary process to when, boom. So, I mean, if you really wanted to identify the day the Constitution was ratified, that would have been, I think, when Connecticut or New Hampshire ratified it. And, you know, that's because they had the ninth state. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the state, you know, was created at that point. The federal government did create it. But it, so like I said, the U.S. Constitution was in the evolutionary process that once the states convened into Congress, all states ended up joining and acquiescing to the U.S. Constitution. When they came into the Union, they accepted the Constitution as the supreme law of the land, abandoning all previous forms of government. So the Constitution, I can't emphasize this enough, superseded all of this. So it goes on and says, which is not expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled, the Northwest Ordinance, 13 July 1787, the Greenville Treaty, August 1795, and the Ohio Construction of 1803 Joint Resolution for admitting Ohio into the Union. So this is probably something that they have for Ohio, but they're completely obliterating what the Constitution is. And they're actually, so they include the organic Constitution, but the Articles of Confederation and the Northwest Ordinance were superseded. Why even bring these in other than the fact that by creating this pot, this melting pot, oh, that all of these things apply? They don't. They don't apply. And as a matter of fact, the Jural Assembly and the concept of the people having the right to form common law grand juries and common law at a citizen level is all monarchical form of government. In other words, folks, the only way you can get a common law grand jury formed is to get your county commissioners to fund it. Because bottom line, it costs money to create the venue, and it costs money to actually put people in there and hold them hostage, so you have to compensate them for their time. It may be considered, you know, a little stipend, but at least they're compensated and you compensate them for their travel or what have you, just like regular jury duty. So anyway, so they conclude going through all of this that they, you know, admit the Constitution, the Bill of Rights through 1791, through the original article of amendment of the 13th Amendment, revoking and rescinding all amendments thereafter. And I'm going, how can they do that? How can they rescind those? Because, oh, it doesn't help them. Or the problem with organizations that go into the 13th, 14th, and other amendments is that they look at them as problematic. They're not. That's why I say the 17th Amendment did not take the sovereignty away from the states. It just changed how the senators were being appointed. It perverted the Senate, absolutely. We can rescind the 17th Amendment. We can rescind it. We do not have to repeal it. That's a completely different show, though. The 16th Amendment does not give them power to spend on anything that they want. All of these amendments are not problematic. So the fact that they're basically saying that they are, I have a bone to contend with them. Because what these amendments did, and the 14th Amendment that we call the 14th Amendment, technically it's the 15th, but what we call the 14th Amendment is the keystone amendment that we need to hold government accountable based on the system designed by the framers. So as they go through this, you're basically then saying, in so ratifying and adopting the amenable usage of the above attachments, we, the people of my state, a free and independent state, desire to serve notice upon the world through and any and or all available media applied, freely dispersed, including but not limited to through de facto United States Postal Service, in accord with this notice assembly establishing through this notice their state. So in other words, they're creating a shadow state. So why would they do this? Why? When what they need to be doing is they need to be going into all of the infractions. Folks, it's a long list. Martin Luther, you know, came up with 95 violations of the Catholic Church that he knew of. There were probably a lot more. But he created 95 that he could prove that were violating the scriptures. Folks, our duty is to define how the federal government is violating the Constitution, not to quit, throw in the towel, and go off and join a whole bunch of other pacifists into a room to say, we're no longer a part of that, and we're going to be doing this. What you're doing by claiming you're a part of another government is you're throwing away your citizenship. You're throwing away your duty and obligation as a U.S. citizen to hold the government accountable to the Constitution. This is why these types of things, this type of behavior by any U.S. citizen is one of our greatest threats. Because you're removing yourself from being a part of the solution, which means it's harder for us to solve the problem. We need all hands on deck. We need to get everybody engaged in this process. Let me turn to the Appendix B. This is a Declaration of Unalienable Rights held by indigenous power. Interesting that they're using these types of terms. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected. It's interesting that they're basically dissolving. They're using that phraseology. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all humans, instead of all men, were created equal. You know, would the gender make that gender happy? When surrogate powers and officials, I'm just reading the top parts of these paragraphs. When surrogate power officials assume the rights of indigenous power as supreme, a free and independent state inverts into a state which usurps the inalienable rights of the people, and they become mere subjects of mandatory conformity, victims of suppression, blah, blah, blah. So the covenant of affirmation is, I am created equal, and all men and women with inalienable rights held by the indigenous people, I solemnly affirm, publish, and declare, I absolve from all political allegiances foreign to this free and independent state. Folks, these people are taking an oath that they absolve themselves from being a citizen of the United States and a citizen of the state where they reside. Can you fathom the danger in this? First off, you now claim that you're a no man. You're a nomad. You happen to be living on the land that is actually, the law of the land is the U.S. Constitution. Now, there's a Bolshevik Revolution going on. And the Bolshevik Revolution is a bunch of people that believe that they can do anything that they want because they're creating a democracy. And they're moving us down this path. We need people to understand. We need these people to check back in, to claim their citizenship back, and to actually destroy and basically make a statement that they have nothing to do with this anymore, that they are a U.S. citizen, and that they want to hold the U.S. government and the state government and the county government accountable to the U.S. Constitution. And ergo start using the right of petition in holding them accountable. Because if we're not doing this, folks, if we're actually allowing them to basically come up with whatever they want to, their whims and their, as Jefferson said, as they discern what they want to do, they can inflict whatever. And that is not the truth. The resolutions of Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions that followed clearly delineated that we have a responsibility. Our public servants have a responsibility. And this is so clear. You know, if you start reading these documents, this may actually help unbrainwash people from believing that they're subjects to this unconstitutional state. We're not. We are subjects to the U.S. Constitution and can be compelled to defend that and should be defending it. We'll be right back.
Set the record straight. Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me kind of get through some of these, because this is Appendix B, and the next one is, I think, Appendix C. This is the Jural Covenant of Office, and so this is where they get into the Jural Assembly. With right hand raised in front of 3 live witnesses in Jural Assembly, by your own words, pledge the following for the Jural Covenant. I declare my inalienable rights are held by indigenous power instead of our inalienable. Let me not get into the nuances. Assembly in this free, independent nation with a firm reliance on divine providence, I support. You know, I believe it's important that we maintain, you know, our religious expression, those types of things. And the only way to do that is using the U.S. Constitution. Anyway, it goes, I am sentient and of free will and by this covenant, I agree and accept, serve as a jurist serving the state, free and independent state. And then I state your name, do solemnly pledge by Jural Covenant to serve with the county settlement, lawfully settled within the geographical boundary of Ohio, a free and independent state. So they've declared Ohio separately as a free and independent state that has a different form of government than the one that's being what they call the de facto. I will delegate power from inalienable rights and indigenous power. And so they go through this. If you read this, you're basically swearing yourself into a new shadow government as a citizen. You do these things, folks, and it's the same thing as becoming a sovereign citizen. And that's not good, because under the United States Constitution, you are sovereign over all things you have not delegated. It doesn't matter. These are just fundamentals of government. Even in the Jural Assembly, even in Russia, You know, you are sovereign over those few things that you have not delegated. In America, it's very few things that we've delegated. And when government exercises a sovereignty and or power that is not delegated, what do? That's right. Your instant second nature response means and must be we have to initiate a First Amendment right of petition of government for the redress of grievances. We have to initiate these things, folks. Going down this path does two things. It puts you in risk because, bottom line, you now can be deported and they can send you anywhere that they want because you have no claim to be in your state anymore, and you have no claim to be in, you know, in this nation or anywhere. They can send you anywhere they want because you have no government. You've affiliated yourself with a bunch of people that, so I can't tell you how dangerous that is. And secondly, even the more dangerous thing is, here we have good people that could be signing First Amendment petitions, writing them, and participating in taking our country back and getting our constitutional republic restored. These people are actually checking themselves out, and there's people up the chain that are telling them that this is all legitimate, when it's not. None of this is founded underneath our constitutional republican form of government. Every premise that they're making that initiates what they can do all came from the monarchical form of government. Why is it that these people are not being taught the right of petition and how important the right of petition is? By using that, that's how we hold our government accountable. It is the purging mechanism. I have made this argument, and I believe it is the most salient argument out there, that the way our government was designed was like an immune system, that every person is like a cell in the body, that we have a responsibility to initiate the purging of foreign government, that we use the First Amendment petition to initiate that purging. And in so doing, we communicate through the chain in the body up to the brain that these things must be done. And as we do so, we do it through all the tissue of the body so that all of the people of the county, there's the tissue of the body, the people that make up that part of the body, the people that make up that part of the state, a bigger, the thigh and then the whole leg, the state being the leg. This all makes sense, folks, that it's designed in a process, in a way, that gives all of us the responsibility, which is why in the Constitution, the only entity that has the authority to enforce the laws is the militia. The ultimate checks and balances, it just overwhelms me, the brilliance of this design. I couldn't even have come up with this. I couldn't have. And I know the framers didn't. And as a matter of fact, they've actually done analysis that the complexity of this eluded the education and the comprehension of these men. Most of these men couldn't even put into words some of the things that we now see and some of the things that they failed to see, like the ability to legally hold and remove somebody just like that. And the 14th Amendment was that vehicle that did that. Anybody that sees the 14th Amendment as a problem, they're just looking at it wrong. And I hope that they're a patriot, and I hope that they just buck up and go, you know what? Because these people that rail against things that are, to me, done by our Creator, and they rail against it, I dare say that it comes close to almost blasphemy. It comes close to actually mocking. The 14th Amendment clarifies so many different things, and that's why we go through the 14th Amendment on this show. Go back through the 14th Amendment when we read it back in October or November timeframe. It's right there on the podcast page for 2022. Go read it. Listen to how we cover what each of these parts do. I mean, this is so critical, folks, in understanding how Section 1 is so, I mean, the way it's been perverted, absolutely, the jurists have been guilty of perverting and reinterpreting and trying to redefine this. You want to understand the 14th Amendment, you have to read the Congressional Globe as those who were the proponents for it defined it. It has been the opponents constantly that have been telling us what it means, and it has nothing to do with what it means. It does not create a subjugation and basically elevate or remove your sovereignty and make you chattel to government. That is not within the 14th Amendment. And nobody can prove this. Every time they prove it, they go, oh, well, it's in the Organic Act. It's in some other subsequent act that's not the 14th Amendment. Going back to this National Assembly's handbook, if you read Appendix E, the agenda for convening your county, your general assembly on your state, and what to do, it shows you right here exactly how to have your meetings and how to get organized, how to create your township supervisors, your sheriff, suggested county offices that they, you know, want you to get involved in and or coerce into or convince to join the general assembly. Anybody that's susceptible that falls into this will realize if they're involved in government and they're actually involved in the general assembly, then they are in huge risk because they've taken an oath of office of supporting the U.S. Constitution, and now they're supporting something that's completely different, and they're involved in a shadow government. The shadow government was necessary when we broke away from England. We had to get organized to be able to take the beast on. What these people are doing is they're actually going and they're trying to destroy the U.S. Constitution. They're not trying to restore it. I am telling you, there's no path that will bring back the design and the government that we have that the framers gave us. This path is a path that takes us away from that. Satan is doing anything and everything he can to lead us in every direction away from this hybrid constitutional republic that the divine hand of providence inspired our framers to give us. There's no doubt in my mind it was designed as the governmental solution for all mankind, for everybody on the earth to be able to live in a land of liberty, that we can actually live freely and hold our government accountable to those few delegated roles, responsibilities, and powers that we have delegated within this Constitution and the amendments that we chose to delegate. We have to hold them accountable. I would invite you to go through the other appendixes. Go through Appendix K. Go through, what is this last appendix that I think you need to go through? The one we were just going through, Appendix E. Go through these appendixes, go through the handbook, and you tell me if this is actually getting our government back or creating a new one. You know, I know Bill's a smart guy, and I know he doesn't understand. He thinks that this is actually something that's a legitimate process. No, this is a remnant of the monarchical form of government that actually operated on this land before the U.S. Constitution kicked in. And the fact that there are anybody that is ignorant on the Constitution, whether it be a judge or a politician, a lawyer, it doesn't matter. If they don't understand the Constitution and they go down these paths, they are putting themselves in jeopardy. And we don't need patriots in jeopardy. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.